Heyo, and here we go. Welcome to another episode of We Talk Music. I am your host, Mr. Brett Podcast, the chief defender of the faith and one half of the Metal Nerds right now. I am joined by a very special guest. He is the former lead singer of Iced Earth, currently with We Are Sentinels, and the reason that we're here talking to him today, Ashes of Ares, one of the best singers in the business, Matt Barlow. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm good, good, Brett. Thanks for having me on, man.
Oh, man, it's very exciting. I mean, this is a great new album, and you know, what an awesome singer you are. Happy to have you on the show. So the first question that I want to ask is, how has the reception been for the new Ashes of Ares album, Well of Souls?
It's been pretty good, man. I mean, you know, it's hard for me to judge completely, but you know, from what I've seen, at least for the reviews and things like that, it's all been good, and you know, certainly fan response on our Facebook page, and you know, through the rest of the interweb, it seems to be pretty good. So yeah, we're happy. I mean, we're really happy with the record. We were happy with it, you know, when we were in final mix and all that stuff, man. We were feeling the heavy vibe coming off of it, so it sounded to us, it sounded really great. And we, you know, the combination with the artwork and all that stuff, and it's coming together really well, man. I can't wait for people to, you know, have a physical copy in their hand if they don't already. I don't have it in my hand. I wish I did, but I'm waiting for it. So you know, it's coming.
Excellent. Yeah, it must be odd to be waiting yourself for it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's, you know, we don't get any preferential treatment, man. You know, we get it when everybody else does.
Oh, there you go. That's good. Now, one thing I'll talk about right off the bat is I really enjoy the album, but it's the trilogy that totally sets it over the top for me.
Right on, man. Thanks.
Like, once he hit Let All Despair and Ending with Spirit of Man, that's some great stuff. So what goes into writing the lyrics for the album?
It really just kind of hits me, you know. It's kind of just a thing. For instance, Let All Despair started out, that just kind of started out with me playing acoustic bit. Starting with doing the melody that pretty much runs through the whole song, because there's not, it's like kind of a weird song. Again, I don't know if people picked up on it or not, but you know, it's pretty much the same melody from thing, you know, one to the next. It just, the way that we try to build it, it just kind of feels like it goes from like low tempo all the way up, and it just kind of has this overall vibe in it. And you know, thankfully I have a great writing partner with Freddie that took my basic idea here and just kind of launched it. And so that's where it started, that's where the trilogy started, with the lyrics and the melody. And I didn't realize that at the time when I was writing that song that it was going to turn into a trilogy, but I was like, well, this is a really cool vibe, and I'm going on with it. So that's, and I, you know, I think that it could probably expand even more. I think the story is thus that it could really kind of expand into a much larger universe.
Now, is that something then that you're really focused on, is the idea of kind of telling a real story with your lyrics and perhaps expanding it into a universe in that regard?
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, it is. I mean, and I've had a couple songs that I've thought, hey, man, this could really be cool to kind of go into this universe. But in my mind, I've sort of already created the universe for a lot of the songs. And I just let people, I'm just not like a wordy guy. Where my lyrics are concerned, Let All Despair is probably one of the more wordy songs. You know, there's a lot more going on inside there. Typically I like to just let things be a little more fluid and let people kind of fill in the blanks themselves, you know, let their imaginations run. I did the same with these songs, but I think that there's probably stuff that, you know, that even people, you know, if they're giving me feedback on the songs, if they say, hey, you know, where is this going? What is, you know, what is the darkness? What is that all about? What, you know, what are these things? If they, you know, if they are, or maybe they give me, say, hey, this is what I think this is, you know, that's cool too, you know, because who knows? I mean, there's all these songs have kind of questions. There's kind of always kind of a question mark on the end of a lot of the songs. and the trilogy is really no different. But I do try to tell a story with the songs, and at least in my mind, it's a full story. But I may not fill in all the blanks for everyone, and I kind of like that. You know, that was one of the cool things that I really dug about, like, conceptual records like Operation Mindcrime. You know, there was a lot of space in there. You know, they're telling a story, but they leave a lot to interpretation as well. And that's what I love about that record, and I that's what I always try to think about whenever I'm writing lyrics. I want there to be enough space in there for people to kind of fill in the blanks and kind of, you know, do their own thing where the lyrics are concerned.
Well, and I think in the case of a record, especially when you talk about Operation Mindcrime, there's such a, there's a real, I guess, age to it. You know, it will age well over time because it's not just of an era. It's telling stories which can be timeless in that regard.
Right, right. And it is. And a record like that, I mean, you know, that's, you know, it's good and bad, I guess, for Queensrÿche, because it's like that's the record that they're always compared against. You know what I mean? Almost like Metallica with the black album, you know. But Operation Mindcrime is like one of those things where you just go, you know, yes. And you know, there are probably some people that are going, they should have never done Operation Mindcrime 2 because it doesn't, you know, to me, I mean, I'm just an asshole for saying it, but I just think that Operation Mindcrime was just like an awesome record and just well written, well thought out, and the music is part of the character, you know what I mean? And that's the cool part about it. Each song has its own thing, you know, and it just creates this beautiful picture. But there's a lot of space in there that you can use for interpretation. And maybe I don't want to know what they had in mind. Maybe my interpretation of it is so much cooler than what Jeff Tate was thinking when he was writing lyrics, you know? So in that regard, I respect that. I respect that and of a listener as well. So whenever listeners are listening to my, you know, my lyrics and they come up to me with their interpretation of it, I'm totally respectful of what is in their mind, you know, because it's very important that they feel something about those songs.
No, and firstly, I love Queensrÿche as well, and I totally agree with you. I think Operation Mindcrime 1 especially is just that perfect snapshot, and it, ultimately, I think it's too hard to go back. But when it comes, yeah, I like the fact that you talk about the idea of basically treating the audience and the listeners as adults and giving them, you know, something to think about and something to kind of chew on in that regard. I do appreciate that.
Yep. Absolutely.
Now, I'm interested in the album art because it is beautiful. There's no question about it. Let's talk about that. Where did it come from, and what was the concept beside it?
Yeah. So Camille, I've known for quite a long time. He's kind of been a fan of mine for a long time, and now I'm a fan of his. You know, I have been. And I dare not pronounce his last name because it's hard for me to do. but he is a phenomenal artist, and he's got this style, and I liken it to, and I told him this, and he was actually, you know, very, very proud that I liken. I don't know. I'm not sure if you know the artist Simon Bisley.
Oh, totally. Biz. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I've met him, in fact.
So he's got a very Simon Bisley kind of a vibe. Very starts out very dark and then adds color to it to create these shadows and things like that. And that's his style. And I love it. And so, you know, when he actually did some artwork for us, he did some artwork for it. And we may end up seeing if he wants to release some of that stuff as well, later on, but he did some concept art for us for like One Eyed King and things like that for songs on the last record that, you know, after the record was out and all that, he just did them because he loves the music and he loves art. And, you know, he's like, that's his thing. And, you know, just beautiful artwork, but he sent them to us as gifts. And so it was just natural for this record. Freddie was like, let's see if Camille wants to do not the cover, but also do a piece of art for every song, and we'll give him an idea of what the song is about, and you just let him go with it. And we did that, and we were just so blown away by what he provided for us, man. And you know, he gave us a couple different concepts for cover and all that, and so we just started picking stuff, and you know, we ended up with the one that, you know, that we have, which is absolutely beautiful. I love the cover of the record. I think it's just, it's a really standout. I think that anybody that sees it in, you know, in record store or whatever will be, and I say that, you know, record stores are very hard to find anymore, at least around where I am, but it's just cool, man. It's just very, very cool looking artwork, and hopefully people dig it as much as I do. And so that's it. So, you know, again, I have still, you know, told this with the all the folks I've been talking to this morning. I urge people to go out and buy a physical copy, because they are not going to be disappointed by this artwork. It's absolutely beautiful.
I mean, the whole package is fantastic, no question about it. So now, you being a comic fan in that regard, how does that work within the way you write and then the way everything kind of comes together?
I don't know that it directly influences. I don't know, man. I start, like, when I listen to music or I have a concept in my mind, it's a picture in my mind. So maybe in that regard, it's like a storyboard, you know, so that kind of falls into that comic thing. And then I start writing based on the visuals that I have in my head. And, you know, that, I guess maybe that works out that way. I don't know. Usually it's just a matter of timing and pacing and some rhyme in there. You know, I'm a rhyming guy. You know, I do like to rhyme things, and I think it's a very effective tool in song writing. It's why, probably one of the reasons why, whenever people are you know, rapping and their words don't rhyme, it drives me crazy. You know, because it's like, dude, you don't even have there's not even a melody there, and yet you're throwing these words all together just based on a beat. It just makes no sense and drives me crazy. But anyway. I won't go into my displeasure with rap at this point, but that's kind of where I'm at. And I love old school rap is so cool, man, because it all rhymed. It rhymed and it had cool, you know, rhythm, and it was something. But as soon as you start going, you know, everybody in the rap business starts going sideways on stuff. Anyway, I'm spending way too much time on that.
That's fair, because we could both talk about that for quite a while, I'm sure.
Yeah. We'll leave that one alone. Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, I love comics. I love, you know, obviously, you know, one of the songs is about a you know, probably the most famous character in comic book history. So there's that, and not only inspired by the comic, but also certainly by the latest film representation. You know, as it is, it's to me, it's weird that people don't seem to get like Zack Snyder's vision of, and yet that's his kind of vision is kind of my thing. With that, there's a lot of cool, really cool visuals that he threw into that movie that really kind of inspired me as far as the direction and the lyrics, and also not only that, the concept of, you know, a father and his son. That was important in kind of developing and developing the song in the direction that I went with it.
Yeah, I do think, especially when it comes to the movies in that regard, and I'll go even as far as the Christopher Reeve version. I think there is some of that as a theme within the mythos, and I appreciate that, because it's a great theme.
It is, and it's also goes back to the very, which I think, you know, the original creators of the character, they were definitely pushing the Messiah button. You know what I mean? They were definitely going, you know, this is the Messiah, you know, their version of a Messiah, you know, rather than coming down and necessarily being all about peace. He actually had some physical strength that he used in his favor to defeat evil. So, you know, with that, that's also in there as well. So, I mean, people have already mistaken it as a religious context, which I get a lot in my lyrics, man. People are always saying, man, he's really, you know, thumping the Bible with this song. No. anybody that really knows that I'm not a Bible thumper guy. I'm just not. I'm not a religious guy at all. I'm very, you know, I feel like I'm very spiritual in a lot of respects. You know, to me, my church would be going out into the woods, you know, and being one with nature. But those concepts are cool, man. I mean, you gotta be kind of nuts to think that a lot of the stories and the concepts in the Bible are not cool. They are cool, but they're also very cool concepts within other religions, other, you know, much more ancient religions that the Bible gets some of the context from as well. You know, I mean, look at Greek myth. Those myths of Greek were religion at the time, you know. So got all those. I mean, those are fantastic stories as well. But that was religion of the time. And so, you know, there's a lot of things within religions that we can all learn from that are not, they were actually rules to guide your life by before religion was actually established. And, you know, it was religion started out as stories. And that's basically where it all started. And a lot of the stories were even songs at times, you know, minstrels brought stories of, you know, heroism and the way that people, you know, should live and things like that. And that's a big responsibility, I think. And I think that's certainly a responsibility for musicians, you know, modern day minstrels.
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Now, when we talk about the whole family element, I mean, of course, you have a family, a couple of boys. Like, how does your family support you in this process?
My wife says we don't, but she's jesting. Of course, she does that a lot. She jests. They're extremely supportive. You know, for one thing, they, you know, and sometimes I get the, you know, I get the eye roll whenever I look at my wife and I say, hey babe, I think I'm going to go to the studio for a little bit. And she goes, okay.
In between the years that you recorded the first album to this one, how did things change? How did both of you kind of evolve within the framework of the band?
Yeah. Well, you know, Freddie and I, we started the whole thing together, and we sort of had the same, kind of the same dynamic. But there are certainly some elements that we were trying to accomplish with the next, you know, with this record. Is that what we are always saying? Well, the next record, we need to do this or that or the other. And so there were a couple things that we definitely wanted to address. One of the things Freddie really wanted to go, like, you know, heavier. He wanted to get darker, which I think we did with a lot of the tones and things like that. In his approach to this songwriting, there's a little doomier type stuff. But I said at the same time, I wanted to go a little more, you know, I want to throw some more melody and a little more harmonies on those melodies within those songs to kind of make them unique as well. You know, I didn't want to just do, okay, we're going to do doomy, 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 doomy. I wanted to do like, hey, we'll do, you know, like you go heavy with the guitars and I'll kind of go this way with the vocals, and we'll see how those two pair up. Now some of the times, I'll be honest with you, the way that the song sounded made me want to go heavier with the vocal, a little more low end, and things like that. It just felt natural to do that. But at the same time, I wanted to accentuate those bits with harmonies that were, you know, higher or just kind of different sounding harmonies than I've used before. So I made a concerted effort to do that. I don't know. Hopefully it turned out well. Hopefully everybody accepts that and understands that. I was just talking with another interviewer and kind of describing the way that I was approaching the vocals, and there's certain spots in there you may not hear it through the production, because we didn't want it to exactly pop out in your face and sound too poppy, but there's some areas in there where my harmonies are a little bit like sticks, like, you know, as far as if you pull the music down, and you're just hearing the harmonies, it kind of reminiscent of that. Some of those harmonies are there. So, which I thought was, you know, cool, because I'm a big Styx fan, but I didn't necessarily go that way. I didn't intend to do that. It just ended up sounding that way. In the final mix, they're not super in your face, but they're still there. We still were looking, and that was another side of the things that we were looking to do with this record, is make it a little more guitar rich. You know, we wanted it to be a little more guitar heavy, because the last one, I felt like we both felt like that the guitars got a little bit buried in the mix and didn't really pop. And so we were playing around not only with, you know, tonally with different guitar sounds. We did some reamping and things like that to really bring out certain tones, especially in certain parts that really needed to pop. And so that was fun. You know, that was kind of the fun part about, you know, for me, who's not necessarily, you know, I'm not a guitar guy, but just hearing the different sounds that they were working with, and you know, Freddie and Rob got together to do some reamping and stuff like that, and it was just cool, man. I think it was a lot of fun. It added more textures than we were having in like our demo stage of the record, and I think that all just made the record sound that much cooler, and definitely gave us what we were looking for as far as the guitar heaviness of this record. I think it's a lot more that way than, and some, you know, some people have said, well, you know, I wish, you know, Matt was like a little bit further in mix and, you know, up in the mix or whatever, but you know, it's not the Matt Barlow show, and I don't, you know, I don't want it to be. I want it to be, this is a heavy metal record, and I want to be kind of the icing on top of the cake. And you know, I don't think that it's, you know, I still think my vocals come through plenty on this record, but some people have a different idea, like they want to hear more of me or whatever. I don't know. I've heard that from a couple of different folks, but I think that the mix, we got this mix right. This is a heavy metal mix, and I think it sounds really cool. So that's where I'm on.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that if you were to give it to 1,000 different people, you'd get 1,000 different opinions on what does it sound
right,
like in
exactly,
that regard.
Exactly, and I've heard, you know, I've heard that a lot. I've heard different things, and you know, and then there, you know, you obviously you're not going to please everybody all the time, and that's cool, man. I totally understand that.
Yeah, so I'm interested, because yeah, like for me and my perspective on the album, like I feel like Freddie's doing a great job of playing, like within the structure of the songs, because oftentimes when I hear a guitarist, there's like a desire, I think, to go further and to almost push themselves above the song. But I think what he's doing here is doing a nice job of just being within that song and giving you like the best for that song.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's the cool part about our partnership. And I really feel that way as well. Freddie's not trying to outdo me, and I'm not trying to outdo him. It's like we're trying to create a song. We're trying to create a really, really cool song, and you know, with each song, and make it its own entity. And I think he's done some beautiful work. I think his a lot of his leads on this record are really shining through. It's like they really, to me, I'm like, man, that's just got so much like soul to it, and that's what I love in a lead, man. I'm not like a big, you know, sweeping arpeggio guy. I mean, those are awesome. That's awesome stuff, and anybody that can do that kind of stuff, that's killer. But at the same time, I like a lead that has soul to it, and you know, and can jump from the arpeggio down, you know, just to the you know, pull on up a string just to the right spot, and you know, making it sing. So
oh, yeah.
I think he did some really, really nice leads on this record. And so, yeah.
Yeah, when you can make it work just within that context of the song, it's so much better than just that idea of this, like you say, the sweeping arpeggios. I mean, for me, at least, because so many guitarists can do the sweeping arpeggios because that's all you can work on. But can you make it melodic and make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a much different beast.
Make it own voice. It's really important. I think it's really important for a guitar solo to not just be a guitar solo. Okay, okay, you know, here's the song structure. It's going to go ka ka pa 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 guitar solo pa 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 pa. It needs to really incorporate itself in with the song and be an actual voice. You know, to me, the lead guitar is another voice. It's another vocal. If you know, basically, you know, in within this part, it's just a different instrument singing. You know, singing this part, and I think that's what it needs to sound like. You know, it doesn't need to just be like note, you know, multiple notes within this thing. It just got to be its own thing. And you know, it's just really cool. I'm just, you know, really impressed with him. I told him that, you know, a couple days ago, man. Hey, by the way, I don't think I told you enough that these leads are really cool, man. Because the more I listen to it, the more I go, man, it just hits the right notes, man.
Mm-hmm. So. No, absolutely. And when we had chatted earlier, that was the one thing I was just like, I never got to talk about Freddie, and I was upset about that. But so when it comes to like producing the album and stuff like that, especially with your vocals and adding all the different layers of it, is that something that you really, you know, feel like you want to put the time into so that you can get, like you talked about the Styx vocals, you know, how many maybe tracks of your own vocals would you put into a certain song?
There's sometimes there's a lot of them. I try to do them in different, you know, it ends up sometimes it really looks like there's a ton of vocals on there, but I try to like break them up into different things. Like for instance, the choir part, like at the beginning of the Alien, you know, that's like 8 different things, and it doesn't bounce, it doesn't come out because it sounds like keyboards, you know. But I did like 8 tracks of different, you know, varying, you know, melody, you know, quote melody, and then all the different harmonies within that, and it's kind of squashed. We didn't intend that part, and I didn't intend that part to be like a lead vocal sound. So it sounds like a keyboard part almost. Or one that could be, but that's actually me, just doing a lot of different voices, within that. There's a couple different places. The intro to, not the intro, but the first vocal part, within Consuming the Mana, it's just the same, you know, it wasn't meant to be like the lead vocal part. But so when you're looking at all the tracks, if you're looking at my screen, when I'm tracking stuff, it looks like there's 80 million tracks, but you know, I try to keep bits separate, you know, because I want this to be like, this is one, you know, area here. And then I'll do like the chorus will be its own separate thing. And then, you know, so I want to be able to manipulate those. And basically when I'm going to give our engineer that stuff, I want it to be easy for him to go, okay, this is this part. So it seems very daunting when you're looking at it on a screen, but it's not entirely. And I try not to overdo stuff. I mean, I do layer stuff, but I don't want to do like, you know, 4 tracks of the same thing and then 4 tracks of another. It's not, because anyway, it ends up getting really, really muddled, and you know, you lose certain things. So I like lead vocal track, I'll do typically 2 tracks of that, you know, but it's got to match up. I mean, it's got to match up nicely. And then it's panned left and right to make it sound, you know, it's a recording thing, but it just to the human ear, when we're listening to things stereo, it just makes it sound fuller, you know? And if it doesn't match up, then it sounds like crap, you know? So I've got to be able to, you know, really hit each spot, you know, right on. So, you know, I'll end up doing a couple takes on it, and then, you know, marrying the two together, and then kind of going from there. But, you know, it's, I don't know of any other vocalist that doesn't double track stuff mm-hmm. anymore. Basically just because of stereo, you know, stereo, it just makes it sound like so much better. But anyway, it probably looks like I do a lot, or maybe, you know, there may be some certain parts in there, choruses and things like that. Obviously you want to make it big sounding if you can. But the lead vocal is usually just typically, you know, I'll just do, you know, the 2 tracks, and that'll be the lead. And then I'll fill in all the other spots in there. I tend to have a little bit of a big voice anyway, so it doesn't really take a lot to really fill that void and fill up those sounds.
Yeah, I can imagine because your voice tends to, you have so many different areas and kind of elements that you can achieve within your voice, which I find amazing. Now, how is it that you, I mean, how did you come across all of those areas? Was it just kind of working out and just keeping like, oh, I'm going to try something like this and this?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it was really eye-opening to me the way that there was an instructor that I worked with when I lived in Tampa, and it was in between, I want to see, I guess maybe it was in between Burnt Offerings and Dark Saga. I don't know, but his name is Al Cohen. He worked with a lot of rock and heavy metal vocalists in that area. And he basically, he made me look at voice a different way. Now I had some instruction before, but it was, you know, it always helped me to kind of picture things. And that's, I guess maybe that's a guy thing. I don't know. But you know, you want to see something visually. It makes it better. It makes it easier to kind of do. And he basically gave me a visual of how to look at my voice. And he basically said, it's like changing gears. You know, he's like, you're going to have your head voice. You're going to have, you know, a little, he said, you know, the male voice is kind of different anyway, because we do have all these things, because we have this natural bass or baritone. Most, you know, men have bass or baritone range, and then you have like a kind of a higher head voice that you can get to, but you're gonna have to work on that. And then you've got your falsetto, and you can do a lot of different things within this falsetto. Some people can only do a high clean falsetto, depending on your voice. And so, but what we tried to do was we tried to work on both sides of that. And he also told me something very interesting, which I always thought, and I took to heart. He's like, the more you work on both sides of your voice, the better your range will be. So basically, if I'm bass baritone, the more I can work my voice to get lower, it's going to help my highs. And I really found that to be true. I kept trying to improve, like, where I could go with my, you know, my natural low bass voice and go down farther, you know, that. And it always helped me approach my higher stuff in my head voice and even in my falsetto. And then, of course, I worked on doing stuff. And I, you know, it was funny because John was always like, he was always like kind of pushing me. Like, he's like, you know, Ian Gillan, man, that's where you need to be. You need to, like, throw that right. So I always like, all right, well, I'll try to do Ian Gillan. So I kind of always kind of did that. I was like shooting for that, you know, that high kind of, I found it very easier. It seemed easier for me to do that than even doing like a clean high falsetto. And of course, clean high falsetto, that doesn't really have a lot of kick to it. So it can get really lost sometimes, unless like in stuff that I did with like We Are Sentinels, I was able to use those voices to create, you know, these, you know, feminine kind of voices in there. Quote, I put, you can't see my air quotes, but I put air quotes around feminine. The feminine voices, like the lighter spots when I was really trying to create a big harmonies in there, but not overwhelm the music. So, but when you're doing metal, you really need to have put a little more stank on it, you know, so I tend to do those higher, raspier stuff. And I find those really are, you know, I'm not going to say they're easy for me. A lot of times I'll end up going, what did I just do? You know, I feel like my blood vessels in my behind my eyes have just popped. But it still feels natural for me to get there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say they're easy, but they do feel natural. And it just feels, you know, I'm really happy when I can do them. You know, it's nice, especially when I can work them into the mix. So
yeah,
anyway,
I can see that. That's great. I'm interested because I know that you probably don't get a chance to tour very often. And how would you perform some of these songs live? Is there things that you just kind of strip out?
Somewhat, but then I've been pretty, you know, blessed having like Freddie can do a lot of voices as well. So if there's stuff where we're doing like something high and something low, you know, Freddie might be able to handle the low bit, and I can handle the high part. And then I think a lot of times in live situations, and this is with all bands, is that the listener, the live listener, fills in a lot of the spots as well. Mm. You know what I mean? They tend to be a little more forgiving. They get that, you know, it's not, the live production is not necessarily the recorded production. So, you know, those spots tend to get filled in a little bit by the listener, the live listener. Cause I definitely noticed that in, you know, working in Iced Earth a lot. You know, we did do some playback stuff, quite a bit, but there's still a lot of songs that, you know, were more produced in the studio, but live we couldn't do a lot with. We didn't do a lot of production with, because not everybody in the band is a singer, you know. And so, you know, I think that on our last Ashes of Aries run, we were fortunate. We had Freddie to sing, and I think, well, when we had Dino with us, he could do some high parts and stuff like that. So, you know, we'll see how it goes with this round. When we go out on the road, we'll try to work it the best we can and you know, bring folks as close to the songs live as we possibly can.
How much touring do you like to do, I guess, is the question.
Well, man, I'd like to tour a lot, but unfortunately, the reality of this is that we can't. You know, Freddie and I both have full-time careers. I was just talking with another interviewer about this as well. The market for live performance is very, maybe the word saturated is too harsh of a word, but it's full. You know, there are a lot of bands touring because that's how they're making their money. And so, you know, when you do have a market that seems to be saturated somewhat, it's less chance of local promoters really, you know, paying those fees to get bands where they need to be, to their areas. And with that, you know, it comes into a financial, you know, we come into a financial difficulty, because we actually have to, you know, we got to come out, you know, we got to come out of pocket. It's going to be a tough day for us. So we want to be able to, you know, if we can do a tour, because we can get guarantees at shows or whatever, then we'll do it. Absolutely. You know, if we can get out there, man, we will. But it does come down to, you know, being financially responsible as well. You know, we're not going to put ourselves into debt to go out on the road, man. I mean, that's kind of the idea. One of the reasons why we have a label producing our music and putting it out there, because, you know, we can't financially afford to do that all the time. You know, we put a lot of time and money into pre-production and all that. You know, I countless hours, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hours out there putting in time to write this music for the record. So it does kind of come in, and believe me, man, I love writing and recording, and I probably would still do it even if we weren't putting out records. However, you know, all this stuff does factor in, and it is a matter of being financially responsible. We will get out there if we can, and we certainly will do everything that we can to get out there. We're working on stuff right now. So, you know, it comes down to the finances and all that. An example of this, the last record that we, for the last record, they had, there was a promoter down in Central or South America that was trying to get us down there to do some shows in Colombia and things like that. And we would have absolutely loved to have gotten down there, because we know that that's where, you know, our fans are. We got a ton of fans down in South and Central America, but we kept waiting and kept waiting and kept waiting. You know, we were promised half the money up front, you know, to buy our plane tickets and all this other stuff and take care of stuff. And we didn't see it. You know, it never came. We had to cancel. It was horrible. It sucked, especially for people that probably bought tickets because they were expecting to see us. But, you know, we can't take those kind of chances. That would be completely irresponsible of us as, you know, as a band and you know, regular folks. So, you know, we have to be able to make sure that we're getting paid for what we're doing. Otherwise we're going in the hole and we just can't afford to do that. So, we can't take on that kind of personal, personal hit.
So, yeah.
That's kind of what we're doing. And we're doing the best we can to get, stuff together. Hopefully we can get something together with, one of our other bands on our label over in Europe, maybe that would be great. You know, that'd be awesome. Would be happy to do it. You know, I'd love to do like a label based tour. Certainly have done them before with Century Media, with Iced Earth, Nevermore, you know, that kind of stuff. So that helps on finances and everything else. But again, I don't know exactly where our label stands on that. But it would be great to do something like that. I think it'd be really, really fun. And, and I'm sure that we could work that out in our schedules, but it's just a matter of, getting the guarantees and getting those dates locked in and stuff like that. So we'll see, man.
Yeah. How does touring work within your schedules, like in your case in law enforcement, does it make it like, are they quite flexible with it? And I don't know about Freddie's work.
Yeah. I think Freddie's work is fairly flexible. I know that he can, you know, he can sometimes do work on the road. You know, he's done it before when we were with Iced Earth. And I also, we did all the touring that we did on Iced Earth, and for Crucible of Man, that in support of that record, that was pretty much just my vacation time. You know, it just was a matter of scheduling it wisely.
And, mm-hmm.
And so, as long as it's my time to use, I can use it, and it really, it doesn't matter how it's used, but I have to be able to, a fair amount ahead of time, so that I can plan and schedule and things like that and kind of go from there. But, we can do it. I mean, it's definitely a viable thing. It's just, again, it's just, it really comes down, it's not so much our scheduling, and it comes down to that whole financial aspect of it. It's because, tours do cost money, and we're not kids. We can't jump in a van and just, go around anymore. You know, that's not who we are. So we gotta think responsibly.
Yeah, it gets harder when you get older. No doubt about
yep.
it.
Yep.
So, Rock of Angels Records, how have they been to work with?
I think they've been really cool, man. So far, I mean, I don't have any complaints. They have done what they said they were going to do. They're really pushing us to, get stuff out, pushing to get the videos done and all that good stuff. And, we like a push. You know, we certainly don't mind somebody saying, hey, can you do this? Hey, can you do this? Dustin, who does the PR you've been in contact with. I mean, he's getting stuff lined up, interviews and all that lined up for me, trying to work with my schedule, working with you guys, getting stuff together. So that's all good, man. We're here. We're ready to work. As long as we got the backing, that's phenomenal. It's nice to be able to, call up the label boss or email the label boss. I typically email, but email the label boss and get a response like, quickly. That's always nice. Whenever I have a question or a concern or whatever, I've sent them some stuff. Some fans were talking about the Amazon. There were some issues with Amazon as far as getting the physical copy to them at a certain time. And I'm emailing them, hey man, what's up with this? I'd like to have some answers for fans, man, because they're the ones that are paying the bills. So, as long as we have that open, we don't expect, the moon and the stars from a label. We understand that they have certain restraints as far as, everything, man. I mean, it's a tough market right now for music. And, communication is key. And as long as that communication is there and we can talk about how things are going, then that's really, really important for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you went from Nuclear Blast. Now you're on, Now you're on Rock of Angels. And do you think that you'll be recording another album on Rock of Angels? Will it be sooner than 5 years?
It will definitely be sooner than 5 years. I think regardless, I hope that we're going to do another one with them. I mean, continuity would be nice, you know, for sure. Hopefully they feel the same way. Hopefully they feel that, that this record is doing well. And hopefully they feel that, you know, we're a good bet, for the next record. And, but yeah, it's not going to take us as long for the next run. I guarantee it, man. And I think that, you know, that we're, you know, I think that we're in a groove now. I think Freddie and I have like, we're clicking. It is just going to be Freddie and I. We're not going to expand outside that, anymore. I think we've got a, like I said, we got a good groove. We got a good thing going. We bounce ideas back and forth, really well. And within a timely fashion, I think that's really important to get the work done, quickly for the next record. We definitely do not want 5 years in between, this one and the next one, and it's not going to happen. So.
Yeah, it must certainly take some of the momentum away if you wind up recording like that, you know, and spending so long in between the albums.
Yeah, because there's a few of the songs on the record are definitely, you know, they're years old. You know, we've had them. You know, we've had the basic, if not the entire song, the basic structure of them. So we've been listening to them a long time, and you do tend to end up getting what we in the business call demo-itis. You know, so. So whenever I go back and we have this song back here and I go back and revisit it because I feel like I could do something a little bit different, then I send it to Freddie and he's like, man, that sounds so weird to me, you know, it's because I've been listening to it, you know, for so long at this. And, you know, we don't want that to happen, you know, anymore. You know, we'll want to probably, you know, get in there and hammer out. And I think one of the things about that, it's not that was a bad thing for this record, certainly revisiting things and doing, maybe looking at songs a little differently. But I think for the next one, we do have some other songs that we were working on and we thought were, not that they weren't strong songs, but that they just didn't fit as well within this record and within the framework of this record. So we may visit those songs again. But there's going to be a lot of, you know, fresh ideas coming off of this. And I think our wheels are already turning about ideas, for the next record. So, you know, that's always a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. Now is it typical then when you're dealing with a label nowadays that you would only sign like a one album deal?
I guess it probably is, man. I don't know. I don't want to paint myself as the be all end all of the music industry. I spend as little time within the music industry as probably anybody, I guess. but I know well enough to know that because I don't know the industry, I do rely on a label to get stuff done. And I know that I do know that within the last few years, the industry has changed a bit. Probably drastically, but you know, I think more in the last few years, it's probably changed a little bit more to the betterment of the label, of the labels, because they figured out a little bit better how to market their own music and create financial streams from digital downloads a little bit better. And so maybe there's a little less piracy going on and a little bit, you know, more of the labels making some money off of digital stuff. But I defer to them because they are the industry and I'm not, I'm a songwriter. You know, I like to write songs and I'm definitely not the guy that's going to do very well as far as, self-promotion and doing all these bundles and packages and things like that and marketing it myself. That's just a lot of work, man. That's just a ton of work. And I just don't have that time. Honestly, you know, because to me, that just takes away from the creative aspect of it. And I totally understand bands that do it, because they need to, and you know, that's fine. I totally dig that, but I'm more of a guy. I rely on that record company to kind of pay for the,
studio and do all that, and then let them handle that. And if at the end of the day, you know, the band, we don't make money off of those record sales, that's okay. I mean, as long as they're making the money and they're happy with what they're making, and I'm fine with that. And I still will go out. We'll still go out and promote as much as we can. We'll do as many interviews. We'll play live shows if we can. Obviously, live shows is where we're going to make our money. If there's any money to be made, so we'll get out there as often as we can, and promote the record, and you know, promote it any other way imaginable. You know, social media. I'm always, you know, constantly probably bombarding my friends and family with stuff about, you know, about the record or the videos or whatever. They probably get sick of seeing me, but you know, that's the only way that I know how to promote it the best. And so, you know, I do what I can.
Well, and I know that I certainly appreciate, and our listeners certainly appreciate the fact that you make yourself available, because you know, I think it's great when you're able to get out there and explain and just kind of talk, because I know that I get more excited about it, and I hope that our listeners do as well. I mean, from all the feedback that I get, they typically do.
That's so cool.
I do appreciate that.
Sure thing, man.
I'll just ask one last silly question. So what is your favorite James Bond movie then?
I really do like Casino Royale. I think it's a really, that movie to, and I love James Bond of all eras, man. I mean, you know, and each one had its own thing that really kind of propelled it within that particular era of movie making. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like Dr. No, you know, starts out and it's like, it's very much a more of a melodrama, because it fit in with that genre, you know, that particular time frame of movie making. And then you've got, you know, everything else, you know, it gets more bombastic as it got bigger and bigger and more bombastic, you know, Moonraker and all that stuff. And, you know, in the Roger Moore era and, you know, but I think the cool thing for me about Casino Royale, it definitely pulled it back a little bit, even though the guy is obviously superhuman, you know, I mean, obviously he's not pulling all of this stuff off, you know, as a regular human being, but it brought it back more into the kind of the quote realistic, area of James Bond, with a lot of things. It was almost demanded by movie making at that time. Whenever you've got, you know, you got your Jason Bourne and all that, you know, that kind of storytelling, and people really were honing in on that. I think that they did a really smart thing and kind of pulled back a little bit on the bombasticness of Bond and brought him more into a, you know, obviously, you know, the dude's still, you know, the character's still crazy, you know, bombastic, but the whole overall picture of it seems a little more quote realistic, you know what I mean? And it was just good storytelling. I thought it's really, really cool, cool stuff. And I love Daniel Craig's, you know, take on Bond, and it'll be kind of sad seeing him go. But then again, I'm kind of excited about the next Bond, you know, and I know he's got one more to do, but you know, it's always kind of always neat to see where it goes from there, you know, and see the next iteration of the character. But yeah, I'll say that was awesome. I also really dug Skyfall. You know, I thought Skyfall was really great, you know, with Craig as the lead.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I'm a huge Bond fan. I've loved James Bond for decades. And like when I saw Casino Royale, I was completely excited because I love the fact that they go through the entire movie and that it's only right at the end that they bring in the James Bond theme, because that's when he's actually James Bond in that moment.
Right.
So I really appreciated that. Now, Daniel Craig is significant, by a long shot, my least favorite. Like, he has actually taken me out of James Bond.
Okay.
Because, and so I'm the guy at the side who's kind of like, yay, a new James Bond, I get to get back into the series again.
Yeah, and no, everybody's got their favorite, and I get, totally get that, man. And each one had their, you know, each one had their own thing to it, you know, added mm-hmm. their own vibe. I'm trying to think of my least favorite.
I think it's Timothy Dalton. It might be Timothy Dalton for me before.
Yeah, that. Yeah. Timothy Dalton's probably my, and it's not necessarily because it's Timothy Dalton.
I think
it's because of the writing itself. Because I think Timothy Dalton's a great actor.
Yeah, those movies are just so 80s actiony. They almost right. don't fit within that context of the Bond universe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it was kind of weird. It's almost like Never Say Never Again or something. It's
yeah, like, yeah. If you could separate it in that regard, then they're and actually, if you don't look at them as James Bond movies, then they're much better movies. But
right,
and then like for me, George Lazenby is actually my favorite James Bond.
Dude, I really like it. Well, for one thing, that movie itself is phenomenal.
It's great.
Mean, just the whole Telly Savalas, you know, playing the villain was just phenomenal. I love that. And it's just cool, man. Just the overall cool. Yeah. It's really, really sad that marriage couldn't have lasted. Kind of sad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that interesting, he's kind of the down the road between Sean Connery and Roger Moore.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, you can definitely see that combination.
I had actually just wanted to talk as well, because you're also a police officer, and I just wondered about what it was like being a police officer as well as doing this, and kind of the difference in the camaraderie between, like, being a police officer and being in a metal band.
You know, man, the camaraderie is much the same, you know. I don't have any issue either way. The guys that I'm involved with in the band, you know, understand what I do. They're very supportive of what I do. They get it. They get that somebody's got to do the job. It's a tough job. Somebody's got to do it, and I'm the right guy to do it, I guess they feel. So I like to think that my friends, law enforcement, feel that I'm the right guy to do the job as well. It is a job, you know. It's a job that has to be done, and that's pretty much where I leave it. I don't really take that too much into my interviews and things like that for obvious reasons. But it just it is a job, and it's a very fulfilling career. So I've been very proud to say that my being in law enforcement has influenced others to go into the field as well. So I think that's a good thing, because I think that there needs to be good people, especially well-rounded people in law enforcement, and people that maybe have a different perspective than everybody else. So it's always great to have people from all walks of life be a part of the law enforcement community.
Well, I think it's great that you are willing to stand up for your values to become a police officer and to kind of, do that as well as maintain your career as a metal singer. I think that's to be applauded. No question.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you. And because of it, I'm actually afforded the ability to do this as well, to do metal. If it was another career that I was involved in, I don't know, maybe, and I think probably likely I would still pursue the music, but I've got a lot of support. I got a lot of support from my coworkers and things like that. So it's great. Fantastic.
Though I'll bet that everybody in law enforcement is perfectly okay with you not having long hair.
Yeah. It would look sort of weird if I had my hair up in a bun, like the female officers do. Just not a man bun guy.
That's probably for the best. All right. Well, we're nearing the end, so I will give you the standard opportunity to plug your stuff.
All right. So please, again, I think I said it earlier, but please go out and get physical copy of Well of Souls. Ashes of Aries, sophomore record. The artwork in the thing, if for nothing else, you know, the music obviously is out there. You can get it digitally and all that, so that's out there. But the artwork that's in this record is absolutely beautiful. Don't forget you'll have the lyrics there, so you can read along with the songs, and just enjoy the beautiful art that comes along with the physical copy of the CD or the LP. And I thank you for your time, sir.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, Matt. It's been an honor. I hope that the Ashes of Aries Well of Souls album sells really well for you, and I hope that everybody goes out and does buy a copy. Honestly, I want the copy on vinyl because, as you say, that artwork is so beautiful. The larger, the better, I think.
Absolutely.
So there's no doubt about it. Say hello to everybody from We Talk Music, and thank you so much for coming on. Matt Barlow, all the best.
Thank you, sir.
Let's drive.